Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Eccentrics by Tim Akers. Narrated by Joe Hempel. Chapter 1. I have never been so happy to smell raw foot cheese. Our mode of transportation, the Naglfar, was a flying Viking longship made entirely from the clipped nails of dead warriors, worthy of Valhalla, but also desperately in need of a pedicure, and perhaps a change of socks. The sun-baked deck of the Naglfar shimmered with waves of pure, rancid stench. The cold winds cutting through my armor and into my bones did little to alleviate the stink. Not even Sir Gregory de Haught, despite being drenched in perfume and hair oil, was immune to the cloud of filth wafting off the surface of the grotesque flying longship. Our noble paladin huddled close to the side of the ship, his face pale and eyes watering. A particularly foul odor wafted off the deck, and Gregory lunged for the gunwale. The very satisfying sound of Greg losing his lunch followed. I leaned back on my plank and closed my eyes, basking in the morning light and the reek of toenails. Now this was traveling in luxury. "Why are you smiling, John?" Chessa asked. She huddled opposite me, nose and mouth wrapped in a perfumed stole, eyes watering. "I swear, you're almost enjoying this." "Think of how much worse it could be," I said. "We could be in the stomach of a whale, or falling through a rainbow, or in the backseat of a taxi the morning after Mardi Gras. This isn't so bad." "The business with the rainbow wasn't terrible," Timbo said demurely. "At least when you are falling out of heaven, the view is quite nice." "Was it? I didn't notice, see as how I was screaming in terror," I answered. "Here we have the view, and only a little bit of smell." "You're the one who complained endlessly about the stink," Chessa pointed out. "Let's just say I've seen the advantages of having a flying longship to carry you around, even if it kind of smells."
"Kind of smells," Gregory groused. "My lungs are burning, like actually burning." He coughed violently, then spat something black and viscous over the side of the ship. "We should have brought the saint."
"Matthew had other business. God business," Timbo said.
"We'll be fine." "I get the feeling God business looks a lot like sleeping in," Gregory said. "Not ours to judge." I stood up and stretched, feeling the wind buffet my face.
This wasn't so bad, and it certainly beat the alternative, which, given the restrictions of our magical powers and the laws concerning horses on the highway, usually meant walking. For a brief while, the Naglfar had been taken from us by the Valkyries, back when they thought we were responsible for the theft of a very important and dangerous sword called the Tater Tot. Or something like that. Tater thought? Anyway, they gave it back after we uncovered the true thief, who, of course, turned out to be one of their own, thereby saving the world. All part of the job.
"It's good to see you settling into the team, Sir John," Timbo said.
The bald mage sat comfortably in the front of the ship, wreathed in a cloud of swirling mist. It was some kind of reverse stinking cloud spell that protected him from the worst of the Naglfar's distinct aroma.
"There were doubts about you, you know. You seemed awfully attached to the mundane."
"That's not my fault," I said, poking a finger at him. "You guys need to work on your onboarding process. There has to be a better way to recruit members than trawling through Ren fairs waiting for the world to fall apart."
"It was a bit of a shock for us, too," Timbo said. "You and your car were not exactly what we were expecting."
"I had gotten onto the Night Watch team by killing a dragon that popped up in the middle of a Ren fair last year. It wasn't a glorious battle, more a matter of driving my mom's station wagon through the beast's skull, which isn't supposed to work. The creatures of the unreal are supposed to be immune to modern weapons like guns, grenades, and the engine blocks of Volvo station wagons. That started a whole chain of events that ended with my friend Eric trying to destroy Night Watch so he could live out his dream of being a wizard. Typical stuff, if you think about it. I'm just happy to be a hero. I leaned against the side of the ship and stretched my back. Actual armor was so much heavier than the Renfair stuff I was once used to. I was gaining new muscle just by wearing it around, not to mention the bulk gained in practicing with Gregory. Slowly, I was becoming the kind of knight I had dreamed of being. Very slowly. I looked over at Chesso. She rolled her eyes. What? I asked. You're flexing. Or trying to. But there's armor in the way, so it just looks like you're trying to fart without anyone noticing. I can take the armor off if you'd like. Whatever, she said, looking away. I smiled. Chesso was the ex-girlfriend I will always regret leaving. It was a special irony that we ended up in Night Watch together. Not that I really thought we had a chance of getting back together. Chesso lived in a realm of shirtless, oiled elven men with abs like knuckle dusters. Difficult to compete with that. Not to mention Gregory DeHaat, our newest recruit, and every straight woman's dream of gallantry, jawline, and butt muscle.
Better leave the armor on for now, John, Timbo said from the prow. We're getting close to the anomaly. Thank the light, Gregory muttered.
Right, so what's the plan? I asked as the longship began to descend. Whatever powers controlled the vessel, they rarely took into account the comfort of the passengers. I clung to the oar rail and tried to maintain my composure as we dropped out of the sky.
According to the anomaly actuator, there's a major incursion of the unreal in this stripping center.
I believe you mean strip mall, I interrupted. Our job was keeping the mythic world from interfering with reality. It mostly involved rounding up gangs of gnomes who had discovered spreadsheets, or rogue air elementals hiding in the ductwork of abandoned malls. Today we were dispatched to a strip mall in Exurbia, or, as Timbo liked to say, stripping mall, yes. Timbo gathered his robes and peered over the side of the longship. Esther thinks it could be an accidental intrusion into the mundane, but there's something else interfering with the signal. Better safe than sorry. If she wanted safe, she should have sent the healer, I said. St. Matthew was already on assignment, along with our rogue, Bethany. I hated when the healer was absent. Bad things always happened. Usually to me.
Just don't get hurt, Gregory answered, sliding his massive Zweihander across his lap and caressing the hilt. Kill them before they kill you. Simple enough.
Great advice, Hot. Keep it coming. I gripped the oar lock and tried to lean casually, despite the Naglfar's perilous descent. If a troll is trying to bite me, do I let it? Or should I avoid that?
Depends on the troll, he said with a smirk. My eyebrows shot up.
Wait, are there sexy trolls? I asked. Is that a thing? Gods, John, you're terrible, Chesso asked, covering her face with both hands. I'm just asking. Is it?
Gregory and Chesso exchanged a look and chuckled.
Fortunately, the rapidly approaching ground saved me from further ridicule.
Here we are, Timbo said.
The Naglfar crunched down in the middle of a parking lot, skidding to a halt next to a light pole. The mage leapt smoothly from the ship, followed by Chesso, graceful in her elven leather and glimmering scale mail armor. Gregory and I clambered awkwardly down the ladder, our steel boots clanging as we hit the pavement. The strip mall looked abandoned. Weeds filled the cracked parking lot, and the half-dozen businesses stood dark, their lights extinguished and doors shut. This happened sometimes when the unreal intruded on the mundane. Things got spooky, driving away the usual crowds. It was reality's way of protecting the fragile illusion of normalcy. It's easier to pretend there aren't dragons when there aren't any witnesses.
Looks creepy enough, Chesso said.
Might just be abandoned. Where should we start? I scanned the storefronts. Vape store, laundromat, vape store, cash for gold, nail salon. There it was. Used bookstore, I pointed. Dog-eared discount books, I said. If we don't find a bunch of gnolls in that place, I'll eat my hat.
Your hat is forge-welded steel, Sir John, Timbo noted. Quite a meal.
You know what I mean, I said, taking the helm off my belt and pulling it onto my head. The cheek guards pressed tight against my face. I left the visor up for now, then drew my sword and unslung my shield. The shield was new, a gift given to me by the Valkyries for saving Valhalla from certain doom. They called it Svalin, the shield that protected the earth from the sun's heat. Its frosty steel stung the knuckles of my hand through the iron grip of my gauntlet. I smiled and pointed at the bookstore. Let's make trouble. We are here to prevent trouble.
Will everyone please stop analyzing my cool dialogue?
I stumped across the parking lot, approaching the storefront. The team, at least one of them giggling into her hand, fell in behind me. The front window display of dog-eared discount books depicted an alchemist's lab, complete with bubbling cauldron, tended by a cloak-draped figure wearing a medieval plague mask. Oddly, the figure was surrounded by leprechauns, and the misty depths of the cauldron glimmered with false gold. I paused to consider the situation. Are leprechauns part of our jurisdiction? I asked. Only if they find their way into the banking system. Tembo waved his arm at the display, casting a beam of light across the green-clad munchkins. Those are just dolls, not what we're here for. Okay, then. I put my shoulder into the front door, half expecting it to be locked, or worse, barricaded. But the door swung open, ringing a quiet bell. We swept inside. Silent rows of bookcases stretched the length of the building, obscuring sight lines while filling the air with the heady aroma of moldering pulp and dusty cardboard. A wave of nostalgia hit me, for days spent in libraries and nights tucked into the bookcase nook in my childhood home, filling my head with stories of knights and dragons and ladies fair. I remembered heavy tomes crushing my lap, and the bleary shock of looking up to realize it was night, and dinner had been missed, and homework forgotten, along with all the troubles of my waking life. Reading had been like a dream I never wanted to wake up from. If I hadn't become a knight, I think it would have been a good fate to become a monk, hidden away in some monastery's library, surrounded by histories and the conversations with the dead that came with them.
Man, this place stinks, Chessa said, snapping me out of my reverie.
She shouldered her way past me, casting a distasteful eye over the display tables and stained carpets.
Haunted by a mildew sprite, if you ask me.
We just got off a boat made of toenails, and you're complaining about musty books? I asked.
Have you no respect for the written word?
I was more of a gamer girl, and every time I showed any kind of interest in books, Eric would drop one of his stories in my lap and stand there until I'd read it.
Ah, yes. Zenith Hammer, Legend of the Inchoate Blade of Ebon Vengeance. Both a blade and a hammer, but also Inchoate Vengeance. How could I forget?
Eric, my friend who once tried to destroy Nightwatch, was also a writer, in addition to being a self-made wizard and former villain. Mostly a writer of adjectives, but not even good adjectives like quickly or clearly. Eric was more of an effulgently kind of guy. He had once written a first-person flashback and second-person imperfect. The mind boggles. Eric and his torrent of literature had nearly beaten the joy of words out of me, and I didn't have a lot of other stuff going on in those days to distract me.
Enough chatter, Gregory said.
He drew the wavy blade of his Zweihander and took up position at the head of the stacks.
There are monsters to vanquish and mundanity to restore.
Hooray! Mundanity! I snapped my visor closed and headed for the aisles. Stacks of violently read and discarded books rose around us. The deeper into the store we got, the higher those shelves rose, until it felt like we were in a cathedral of abandoned literature. We were deep in the unreal, as the bookstore transformed around us into a labyrinth of musty tomes. What had once been the information desk was now a babbling fountain with a statue of an owl in the center. Water poured down the intricately carved feathers to splash into a pool at its feet. The bottom of the pool was filled with glittering coins, apparently tossed by hopeful patrons looking for the latest Grisham novel. We paused at the water's edge. What are we thinking? Is there some kind of library spirit we need to know about, Tim? A particular kind of fairy that frequents used bookstores? I asked. There are many pathways into the unreal, but most of them start with books. The mage ran a hand over the dark dome of his forehead, mopping up sweat with the hem of his robes. We're as likely to meet dragons as halflings, though both are usually content to sit in their respective holes and let the world pass them by. We must be ready for anything. He took another pass at his head, then adjusted the collar of his robes. Is anyone else hot? Now that you mention it, a trickle of sweat ran across my face, joining a salty stream dripping down my chest. I figured it was just the armor. I'm not wearing a third of what you are, and I'm about to croak, Chessa said. Her tan face glistened majestically in the fading fluorescent lights, beads of sweat quivering on her supple lips. A flush broke out across her ample. We must be in the romance section, I said quickly. Let's keep moving. Wait! Gregory threw an arm in front of Chessa, pushing her back. Do you hear that? Is it... Chittering, I said. The sound rose from all directions, the rattling chirrup of a thousand pointy mouths. It drew closer. Positions, everyone! We formed a defensive front, Gregory and I slightly in front, Chessa between us with her bow drawn, Tembo at the back, already drawing skeins of swirling light into his staff. Red eyes, low to the ground and glowing with malevolence, appeared in the growing shadows. One pair at first, then a dozen, then hundreds. This feels bad, I said. Maybe it's just rats. Chessa pulled an arrow to her cheek and sent it into the shadows. The darkness shrieked. Drums joined the chittering chorus. Or not? Goblins, Tembo said. More than I've ever seen in my life. Well, there's about to be fewer of them, Gregory answered with a smile. I really wish that idiot would wear a helm. Not because I cared for his safety. I just got tired of looking at his smug face and the spray of oiled curls that somehow always looked like he'd just stepped from the fountain of eternal beauty. Come, friends, let us face them with bravery, that we might win glory and honor for... The goblins didn't wait for Gregory's speech. They rushed out of the shadows in a horde, wave after wave of greasy, scaly, hairy bodies, wearing mismatched armor and carrying rusty swords and crooked spears. Rats would have been better. Chapter 2. The goblin had been on my head for the better part of 2 minutes, trying to pry open my visor so it could scoop out my eyeballs and puke in the bloody sockets. I know this because it kept telling me, in very specific detail, its plans for my bloody eyeholes. Fortunately for me and my eyes, the goblin was about as strong as it was smart, and it was very, very not smart.
Give 'em to us,
it shrieked, banging on my helm with a rusty spoon, its claws scrabbling across my faceplate. I batted at it with my sword, but with each swing it slithered to the other side of my head and clung there, reedy breathing hissing in my ear.
Give us your peepers!
We've discussed this. I will not be giving you my eyes.
Eye holes, then?
The goblin pressed its triangular face against the eye slit of my helm. Its breath smelled like rancid meat and boiled peanuts.
For puking?
None of this is up for negotiation, I shouted, brushing at the foul beast with the edge of my shield. It scrambled out of the way, banging that cursed spoon off the shield's metal rim as it retreated. You doing okay there, John? Chessa called. She stood on top of the owl statue at the center of the fountain that used to be the help desk counter. She had her bow in hand, and a pile of dead goblins bobbed in the bloody waters at her feet. You've got a little something on your forehead. Looks like it's trying to kill you. I'm handling it.
Are you, though?
Yes, I am. I pointed the tip of my sword at my forehead and jabbed at the goblin, but each time I thrust, the beast cackled and swung to the side.
Will you hold still so I can kill you?
You stab you instead?
The goblin suggested. Finally, I gave up on killing it with my sword, plunging the blade into the mossy carpet and reaching for the goblin with my bare hand. I wrapped my fingers around its scrawny, scaly neck. It shrieked in distress and banged away on my gauntlet with its spoon. With some effort, I was able to disentangle it from my helm. The scrawny beast wrapped thorn-tipped limbs around my arm, scraping at my wrist through the chainmail and generally making a nuisance of itself. When I tried to throw it to the ground, it clung to my hand like a sticky diaper. I shook it a couple times, but only succeeded in loosening my gauntlet. The goblin dropped its spoon and sunk needle-sharp teeth into the meat of my exposed thumb. I screamed, dropped my shield, and punched the creature with all my might. It flew across the room and landed with a thump on the rows and rows of books lining the wall.
"Good job, John. You're doing great," Chessa said, before sending an arrow whistling toward the goblin, pinning it to a moldering copy of Bullfinch's Mythology.
"Got that situation totally in hand."
"You don't have to be a jerk about it, Chess," I said, collecting my weapons before stomping over the twitching goblin and impaling it on my sword. I held it up to my face. The dead goblin looked like a cross between an oversized rat, an iguana, and a sock puppet that had been dipped in tar and fish scales. I grimaced at the smell wafting off its body. I don't know what I was expecting a goblin to look like, but this is way worse. And these are really closer to boggies than goblins, in the traditional sense, Timbo said. I could just see his bald head over a row of bookcases. There was a flash of light that traveled from his hands down the aisle, then the sound of sizzling flesh and tiny, popping lungs. Though when you burn them, they smell more like kobolds, don't they?
I wouldn't know, I said, shaking the dead goblin off my sword.
Pain shot through my hand. The quarter-sized bite mark on my wrist burned.
Man, I wish Matthew were here. This better not get infected.
That's just a scratch, Sir John. Gregory rounded the corner from the mystery section.
His armor gleamed in the flickering lights, though his sword was smeared in the blood of his foes.
Maybe you'll get lucky and get a scar out of it. Women like scars.
Some scars, Chessa clarified. Honestly, I wouldn't count on it improving your situation, John. It would take a lot of scars to make you attractive.
You do remember we used to date, right? That I'm the one who dumped you?
Something I try to forget, she said, every day.
It's good that fate has bound the two of you together. Timbo joined us at the information desk, smoke wafting off the tip of his staff. Otherwise, these missions would be downright dull.
Hmph, Chessa and I said in unison. We glared at each other, to the great amusement of both Timbo and Gregory.
Hmph,
we repeated. I turned back to my gear, slinging my shield over my shoulder before digging out a kerchief to clean my sword. The ground surrounding the fountain was covered in a carpet of dead goblins, and the bookstore was slowly melting back into the mundane. I didn't like to imagine what the staff would find when they showed up for work today. Rats, or whatever it was these things pretended to be when they were trying to pass in the real world? A pack of feral chihuahuas, maybe? Either way, it wasn't going to be our problem for much longer.
Okay, folks, let's wrap this up.
No one had put me in charge, but no one had explicitly forbidden me from being in charge, and I was feeling pretty good today. Timbo, we're going to need to put all these bodies somewhere, without damaging the store. Gregory, see if you can do something about the smell. Sprinkle around some of that hair oil. And Chessa, don't, she said.
Right. I was just going to say, you know, follow your true self. Express your intention.
Whatever. I rinsed my sword off in the rapidly shrinking pool.
Good job today, everyone. Really great. Guys?
Chessa was squinting over my shoulder in the direction of the front of the store. Is everyone else seeing this? Sunbeams broke through the cluttered windows that lined the storefront, cutting through the dusty air like a light show. We'd done some damage to the bookstore in our fight with the goblins. Toppled shelves and avalanches of deteriorating paperbacks littered the aisles, while mounds of broken spines, book, not skeletal, rose to the ceiling. Frankly, I didn't remember wrecking the store that badly, but that wasn't what really caught my attention. On one of those mounds of broken books stood a goblin. Unlike the lot we'd just massacred, this goblin was dressed in a neat vest, complete with tiny pocket watch. It was also wearing a bowler pressed low over its beady little eyes. The goblin slung a clockwork contraption over its shoulder and started messing with the buttons on the side. Huh, I said. That looks like some kind of handgun? Where does a goblin get a pistol? Chessa asked. Hardly matters. Modern technology can't hurt us while we're in mythic mode. That thing's as dangerous as a warm breeze. I strolled toward the goblin. Hey, buddy. Why don't you put that thing down before you hurt yourself? We've got... There was a loud bang, followed by a heavy thud in my left shoulder. I looked down to see a puckered hole in my armor, quickly filling with blood. The pain followed a moment later. My shield hit the floor with a clang. The goblin chittered joyfully and started working on the shoulder-mounted pistol, cycling the chamber and working a series of complicated levers with its feet. A thin trail of smoke rose lazily from the barrel. The sharp sound of the discharge rang in my ears. Chessa ran to my side, putting herself in front of the rapidly reloading goblin. I tried to push her out of the way, but she kept pulling at my armor and yelling. My ears were ringing, and the pain in my shoulder hammered through my skull. I realized I was waving my sword around, endangering both Chessa and Tembo, who was trying to get a look at the wound. With a great deal of effort, I sheathed the sword. I'm fine, I yelled. Do something about the gun! The goblin must have heard us, because it chittered loudly, then sighted down the barrel, aiming at me for a second shot. I shoved Chessa to the ground and lurched in front of the goblin, shielding her from the attack. Tembo was weaving a spell in the air, creating a shield of purple light. Gregory's Zweihunder went straight through the goblin and his infernal weapon, slicing through meat and bone and steel to bury the blade 3 inches deep in moldering paperbacks. The pistol, which looked like a cross between a flintlock, a ray gun, and a portable vacuum cleaner, slid harmlessly down the mountain of books. Get off me, Chessa grunted, pushing me aside. I had practically been lying on top of her, and in my armor, that's a lot of weight. I rolled over onto one knee. She got up and dusted herself off, grimacing at the blood that had leaked out of me and onto her elvish battle dress. That was hardly necessary. I was trying to save your life, I said. You know, from the gun. Whatever. I was fine. You're the one who got shot. Oh, yeah, I said, peering at the wound in my shoulder. I sat down abruptly. Going to have to do something about that. Tembo knelt beside me, pulling off the pauldron and making low, comforting noises under his breath. He wasn't a healer, but the big mage knew enough about human physiology to perform basic maintenance. In this case, that meant plugging the hole in my shoulder with a wad of cloth and patting me on the head. Barely grazed you, he said. Your armor will need some maintenance, but otherwise you'll be fine. All the blood. The human body contains well over a gallon of blood. This is barely, he glanced over my chest and the spray of crimson decorating Chessa's corset, 8 tablespoons. What I want to know is how a goblin got a gun, Gregory said, prodding the overly complicated firearm with his toe, and why it worked at all. Should have gone off like a wet paper bag, especially with Rast around. I just want to be clear. I'm not getting any more sympathy for being shot, I asked. No warm embrace, no promises of vengeance sworn against my mortal enemies. Nope.
Chessa answered.
Doesn't seem necessary, Gregory said.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?